It's Tuesday, so it's time for College Football 134 to delve into the Week 9 that was and preview the Week 10 that will be before looking for some value for the weekend. That is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer. And Andrew, in our longest college football season of all time, we have reached winning time. We know who the also-rans are. November should reveal the true contenders, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. We've got some really important matchups. They might not be sexy, but there's some really important college football playoff matchups this week. It's going to be a lot of fun. And that playoff, that 12-team playoff, makes so many games much more exciting. It just does. Like, there'd be situations. We're talking about games that we would not normally be talking about. So great time to be a college football fan and better.
I'm a little appalled you would dare say Pittsburgh at SMU might not be sexy. What do you... We can discuss
there's
those tastes.
There's just some injury issues. That's all.
There are some injury issues. Yes, we will get to those injury issues. There are a myriad of injury issues with that game. But first, we should rattle through the key podcast verbs. Everybody, please continue to subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it. Verbs. And as always, we appreciate it. We need that support. And in exchange, we'll discuss last weekend real quick. We will do a recap of, Friday night's Boise State UNLV game, because you know that broke my heart. On the old did we really get beat that bad chart from our friend Parker Fleming, UNLV was on the plus side of net success rate. Not by much, but by enough, and it was a weekend where that was kind of my anthem. You could say the same thing of Liberty, but at least there we got some comedic value. Anyway, UNLV held Ashton Jeanty to just 127 yards and only one touchdown. They held him in check.
33 carries, right? Like that, his rushing yards total was 196 and a half. So when you keep guy under by about 70 yards, you probably did a good job against expected there. It was kind of what I expected, right? It was a tight game. Like, it was back and forth. Both teams were able to run the football well. Boise just came out on top of it. They made a few extra plays that the UNLV was not able to make. And now Boise is minus 140 to make the college football playoff, with the next group of five team being another team we might talk about a little later, Army at plus 800. So yeah, really interesting situation here. We talked about this a little on Saturday. UNLV is not in control of its own destiny going forward. Colorado State, they're going to need Colorado State to lose a game. And we hope they do too, because I'd love to see these two teams go at it again in the Mountain West title game.
I'm hoping for that, especially because now, like, Boise State won the game fair and square, but it won the game largely because of a Haj Malik Williams interception just before halftime set up Boise State with, I think it was a 7-yard touchdown drive right before the half. Yeah. UNLV could have led 17-13 at halftime and get the ball to start the second half, and instead trailed 20-10. And that was the difference in the game. In a 5-point game, that was the item. So I'm frustrated because I have these UNLV futures and I so enjoy this Rebels offense. But look, Colorado State's only a 1.5-point favorite on the road at Nevada this weekend. Maybe I just need that one loss. UNLV is far and away ahead in the tiebreaker, because in the Mountain West, the tiebreaker is literally power ratings. They average out four different power ratings, and UNLV is leaps and bounds ahead of Colorado State. So I just need this one loss, and it could be this weekend. I can hope.
You can hope. I don't know. Nevada, Wyoming, at Fresno. I don't know about Utah State, but there's chances of loss in there.
I'm not even sure I know about Wyoming. But now let's jump from that edge of the world to corporate football's cousin, the SEC. Texas A&M kind of routed LSU in the second half. I believe the halftime score was 17-7 at halftime, and then a 31-6 second half for Texas A&M. Really, really makes that look lopsided. They go to backup quarterback Marcel Reed. I believe he had four consecutive touchdown drives when he checked into the game because Connor Wagman was so struggling. I'm not necessarily high on the LSU defense, but that was impressive.
Yeah, it was. It's a really weird situation for Texas A&M now. I think the defense is real. They rank 11th in success rate in the country. Got really talented guys all over the place on that side of the ball. But yeah, Wegman looked great against Mizzou, obviously. Just absolutely stomped those guys. And then he was 6-for-18 throwing the football before they make that switch. But that kind of threw, I would say it kind of threw LSU for a bit of a loop there. Obviously, they were planning for Wegman all week. And we've seen that teams that have effectively we've seen teams in the past already this season effectively game plan against Reese. He's obviously not the passer that Wegman is. he only attempted, besides the fact that they went for those four touchdown drives, he only threw the ball twice. Like, they were not throwing the football there. That is a one-sided offense. So it's a really interesting spot for Texas A&M. I don't know. I'm not sure what their situation is going to be like moving forward.
And it's something that I'm going to keep an eye on. We're going to discuss this weekend's game at South Carolina in a little bit, but I'm not convinced A&M should be considered the contender that it's going to be endorsed after that second half.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah, 100%. It's a game-by-game basis for them at this point.
We will get to that game in a minute. First, we also need to discuss another game that had a backup quarterback situation. Alabama trounced Missouri 34-0. Alabama lives on. I'm not sure this game needs much more conversation. As soon as we had that quarterback injury to Brady Cook, it was done. It was over. Alabama game could do whatever over. Wanted.
It was game. Pine came in, and both teams were struggling to move the ball effectively in that first, I think it was like quarter and a half before Cook came out of the game. Pine comes in, immediately throws an interception, and Bama responds with a touchdown, making it 13-0 at that point. And it was, from that point on, it was just over. You could just tell that Missouri had no hope. So, yeah, I don't think we really learned anything about Alabama in that situation. So, they're still in trouble. They've got to blow everybody else out of the water, and I'm not sure they're going to be capable of doing that at this point.
There's a growing playoff conversation to be had, and we're not going to get into it today because we try to focus on the individual Saturdays. But Indiana, BYU, they're hanging around. I'm not sure Alabama at 10-2 would get in, even with wins against Georgia, Missouri, and LSU. It's starting to look more and more like that might not be enough. Might not be enough.
That's a hot take, I think. I think that's a good one there, Douglas.
But Alabama, LSU is in 2 weeks. We should focus on this Saturday. And speaking of this Saturday, Andrew, I don't know about you, but I will be back here at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels for our weekly live show. Please, everyone, join us. This week especially, you have no excuses. There are no after dark games Saturday night. There's no reason you got to stay up late. So you can get up early.
No, of course we can. We get that coffee on, and we'll get those bets to you, and we'll bring the energy and the bets, and you guys just sit back and enjoy.
Sit back and enjoy indeed. One game we will discuss more on Saturday, but I want to start us off with now. We were just discussing Texas A&M a few minutes ago. A&M is a 2.5-point favorite at South Carolina. That's a primetime game on ABC. I was really hoping this line would reach +4. Instead, it fell to 2.5. I can't quite get myself to take South Carolina at the 2.5. Its defense really makes me want to bet on it, especially against – I have this belief that now that Marcel Reed has been seen a bit more, South Carolina's defense can study up on him and fare better than LSU did. South Carolina is excellent at limited explosive rushes, and it's great against dropbacks in general, but its offense is so big play dependent, I cannot quite bet on South Carolina.
Yeah, it's they're so scrappy. I love watching them play right now. They obviously should have beat LSU, could have beat Bama, and they crushed Oklahoma, another team that has questions at quarterback, right? Like they did the Jackson Arnold Hawkins thing, and they looked really bad against the South Carolina defense. So if you see those similarities to what Texas A&M has, then that could kind of lead you towards South Carolina in that sense. I'm kind of with you. I wish we were getting the 3 right now. Maybe take a look at them on the money line instead. But this is two solid defenses going at each other. So I might be looking at the under here. The number is a little lower than I would like. Like 44.5 is a tough one. I would have loved to see like a 46.5, but I don't know. We'll keep an eye on the spread and the total for this one, and maybe we come back to it on Saturday.
You know what, Andrew? I'm going to take a page out of your book, and I have this planned. I have the banner ready. You did not know I was going to do this. I am going to go ahead and take an SEC first half under Texas A&M at South Carolina. Yes. First half under 22.5, and it's because I can't get there on South Carolina. I like your thought of the money line, but this offense is so big play dependent, I'm not going to bet on those big plays against the Texas A&M Mike Elko defense. But I believe in South Carolina's defense. I believe it's going to study Marcel Reed. I just credited Texas A&M's defense. Yeah, I'll take this under 22.5. I thought about an A&M team total under 23.5, but that's a low number, and A&M should win this game, especially with what's at stake in the bigger picture. First half under 22.5. Taking a page out of your book, tough break.
I love it. No, that's fine. That can be our SEC first half under of the week. I love it.
That's what I am here to provide. Take things off your plate, lessen your burden, take care of some things every so often.
You know, you think I work so hard already, though, so you must be, you have to do these things for me, right?
Hey, you said it, not me. Anyway, Pittsburgh at SMU, a battle of ACC unbeatens in conference play. That's a primetime game on the ACC network. SMU is a touchdown and a hook favorite, 7.5-point favorite. Both teams have starting quarterback injury worries, and I don't really know what to make of either of those. Kevin Jennings of SMU, knee injury. Eli Holstein of Pittsburgh, we don't know. And Pat Narduzzi is calling it wait and see. I am baffled and frustrated with both quarterbacks beat up. I am staying away from this game as far as gambling. I'm going to hope SMU wins outright to keep alive ACC tiebreaker laughs.
Yeah, I was just going to say Narduzzi is the ACC's Kyle Whittingham, right? Like, that's when it comes to injury reports. So, like, we're not going to know with Holstein. This was one of my favorite moments of the weekend, though. You and I are having we have our little group chat, and we were just going back and forth, and we said that Pitt might be the most fraudulent team in the ACC right now, or maybe the most fraudulent undefeated team in the country. They obviously won that game against Syracuse, but Kyle McCord did everything he could to make sure the Orange did not win that game. He made terrible throw after terrible throw after terrible throw, and 21 of those Pitt points in that game came on pick sixes. So, yeah, interesting spot. With both quarterbacks banged up, though, like, these defenses, Pitt ranks 27th in success rate, and SMU ranks 20th, total 58.5. Like, I'm leaning under here.
Counterpoint, both quarterbacks banged up. Backup quarterbacks could be more susceptible to making critical mistakes, creating short fields, more turnovers.
If we get a couple of those pick sixes, obviously your unders are in trouble. But I think that they can't reasonably keep up that pick six rate, but who knows? College football's crazy.
Well, my notes here were that Pittsburgh, let's be clear, you didn't pick off Kyle McCord five times. Kyle McCord threw five interceptions. That was a Kyle McCord flaw, not a Pittsburgh quality. So it's not that I'm expecting that to continue, but if Preston Stone's the quarterback, we don't really have faith in Preston Stone anymore for SMU.
I had a lot of faith in him coming into the season. This is a really weird spot because get out of here. You're aware. He was a guy I had circled as a potential game changer for SMU going into this conference at the start of the year. But obviously Jennings has been the guy to run this offense. So I don't know. I think the situation bodes better for SMU if both starting quarterbacks are out.
We have to go to one more game again with a quarterback worry. Let's see here. Of our three games of the week, one, we probably have a backup quarterback, now QB1 and Marcel Reed for A&M. Pittsburgh, SMU, both starting quarterbacks are injured. And Drew Aller of Penn State, he's banged up left leg as the Nittany Lions host Ohio State. That's the nooner on Fox. Ohio State, a 3.5-point favorite. James Franklin could not have been more vague on Drew Aller's status. Said Aller might be a last-minute decision. Aller also might practice Tuesday. James, what do you tell? Like, the temperature today is going to be between 0 degrees and 100 degrees. Do I learn anything from James Franklin at this point?
No, of course you don't. But I think he's playing. I think Aller's playing. This is the biggest game of his career. He seems to be a tough dude. We've talked about his improvements as a quarterback this year and the leap he's made. I didn't tell you about this, but I'm taking Penn State as a best bet plus 3.5 in this matchup at home. Give me getting the hook at home. I'm taking Penn State. I know that Ohio State has had their number in this matchup for seemingly forever, ever since at least James Franklin's been around. But despite that, Penn State has done a decent job. They do this great thing where they give you that hope, right? Like you think they can win the game and then they lose, but they have still been covering a pretty decent amount of the time in this matchup, going 6-2 ATS in the last 8 meetings against Ohio State. Up and down, like talent-wise, like these are obviously two very evenly matched teams. They're two of the most talented rosters from top to bottom in the country. There's not a lot separating them. If Aller is not healthy, that'll be a difference maker here. But if he can go, I think being at home in that atmosphere in this situation, I know you're going to jump in and say, but yes, they've been in this situation at home before. And what has James Franklin done? And the answer is generally throw up all over himself and choke away these games. But Drew Aller is the difference maker. He'll play. Give me the hook.
You know I want to bet Ohio State in this game. I've been loud in my belief in Ohio State all year. I've never been quiet. I'm not going to. The offensive line injuries have me worried enough that I need to see it stand up against a quality opponent before I can invest in the Buckeyes again. Penn State would be a quality opponent, absolutely. And I think Chip Kelly can scheme up some offensive line help. We've seen that before. Notre Dame beat Texas A&M by scheming up offensive line help. It's possible, especially in one-offs. But until I see that, I need to stay off Ohio State. I don't agree with you here, but I'm definitely not going to fight you.
There you go. I like it. Let's go Penn State.
You really are hoping that Drew Aller does play, though. You are putting...
Yes. If he does not play, it is... I would say that this line tells me that oddsmakers expect him to play. Like, right? That's what it says, right?
I would agree.
This is like a touchdown at least.
Now, my hope is going to be that he does play and this falls below a field goal. I can say all these things, but I'm being responsible and not betting Ohio State. But if this is down to neck 2.5, I might actually end up betting Ohio State. I know myself well enough. Those are, in my opinion, the three biggest games this Saturday. There are 35 other games on Saturday. We will discuss all of them live on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern before Week 10 kicks off. Yes, Andrew, all of them. All of them. There are only 38 games this Saturday.
One minute a game. Let's go through all 38. Is that a challenge? Like, you're going to throw down the gauntlet like that? We're going to talk every single game of the week. We're recording right now. Like, this is a statement you're making. All 38 games?
The flaw would be I don't know that we can keep you to 60-second handicaps. When you start rambling on a player prop, you do find many reasons to back them, which are good reasons. They're always good reasons, but they're not quick. You will spend 90 seconds discussing a running back I've never heard of because you go that deep.
Oh, don't worry. We might be talking about Marshall running back A.J. Turner come again on Saturday too.
we will worry about that then. Anyway, folks, please come join us on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels this Saturday morning. Now rattle off our collection of best bets this week. Now, Andrew, we surprised each other. We actually ended up with two best bets on the games of the week. That's rare because the biggest games don't necessarily provide the biggest value, and gambling on college football needs to focus on finding value. We both found value last weekend. I went 5-4. Plus 1.8 units. Would have been even better if producer Jameson didn't force me to bet on Miami. I'm joking, but only mostly. I'm now at 35-38 on the year. I'm still haunted by that week zero offer. It's the deficit I just cannot quite overcome, but I'm getting there. I still believe I will.
Yeah, and the pattern has remained the same for me. It's been bad week, good week, bad week, good week. With 5-3 last week. For plus 1.82 units, we're now 34-40 on the season, down 10.65 units. That's what happens when you pay a lot of juice sometimes, but I don't know. This is the fade week technically, but we're going to build off the momentum of last week. It wasn't like a huge thing. It was a very steady week. We're going to stay steady. The process is good. We're going to build off that week and we're going to string together successful weeks here. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, if you don't mind, because I believe I have one more on the docket than you, I would like to lead us off. Are you good with that?
Go ahead, Douglas. All you, buddy.
I am looking at Boise State against San Diego State, and I do not understand why the home favorite has such a short spread. I'm getting Boise State at neg 23, available at neg 109 at Bet Rivers. And to me, while everyone wants to assume this is going to be about Ashton Jeanty, the number one rushing offense in terms of EPA per rush, yes, it's fantastic. We praise UNLV for holding him to 120-some yards. That's a heck of a compliment to Ashton Jeanty. 120-some yards is usually a good day. But I'm really making this bet because of San Diego State's disastrous offense. The Aztecs can't do a thing. They're terrible. There is no portion of their offense that is redeemable. So if Boise State gets up 23 points, 24 points, 35 points, San Diego State's not going to have a backdoor cover. San Diego State's not going to mount anything. San Diego State's offense is one of the worst in the country. I'm looking at Parker's chart here. Let's just 123 in EPA on offense, 123 in offensive success rate. Now, remember, folks, we are college football 134 because there are 134 teams in the country. To be ranked 123rd is saying you're the 12th worst. Over and over and over again, you look at San Diego State here, they're terrible. So I'm getting Boise State at what I think is a far too short of number. And I'm not worried about a backdoor touchdown from such a disastrous offense.
Yeah, it's not a bad spot there. And I really like Ginty to keep doing his thing in this one. He's got to improve those Heisman odds for him going forward after that down game, 128 yards, you know. But seriously, though, that's all a narrative type award we'll need. He wasn't as dominant in that game. Like, maybe he's just not getting that award anymore.
It was a few Saturdays ago. I think it was either our friend Jared Hockman or our friend coworker John Mettler who hopped in our live show chat. I had suggested that Ashton Ginty would at some point have only 110 yards. I'm like, wow, that's a heck of a cut. Like, yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Anytime that's the case, he's gonna break 200 against San Diego State. That game's going to be an embarrassment. I make that bet because I have no faith in the Aztecs having a backdoor cover. Their offense is a problem. Sean Lewis has more work than he expected.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for my first one. I cannot believe that people are still doubting my Vanderbilt Commodores and my guy, Diego Pavia. We're going with Vandy +6.5 at Auburn this week. That's -104 at FanDuel. They almost did it again. They almost obviously, people will focus in on how the game ended for Diego Pavia against Texas, but they were there. They had a shot, and man, the fight in this team, like, they're so much fun to watch week in and week out. I love the way they're coached. I love the way they're playing, and now you're telling me this team that's beaten Alabama, that had a chance to tie up the game against Texas as a 17-point dog, they're underdogs at Auburn? Like, Auburn, like, Peyton Thorne is the quarterback still at Auburn, right? Like, he is, and, like, he's there. He's the quarterback because they don't have better options right now. They benched him already, and they brought him back because quarterback play has not been good there. Vanderbilt's biggest problem this season, obviously, is giving up big plays on defense, right? Like, teams can have attacked them through the air on defense, 85th in success rate against the pass. But I just don't think that Peyton Thorne is the guy that's going to take advantage of that for Auburn. So I'm taking the 6.5 points here with Vanderbilt. I think that they're just going to keep doing what they do here. I'm not going to be shocked if they pull. I strongly considered taking them on the money line at +205 in this one.
When you started this, I pulled up live money lines and I was like, I'm actually kind of surprised you're not just playing this straight up on the money line. 6.5, man, great number. I'm a little surprised you're not doing a 2-1 money line.
Let's change. Can we change it? Let's do it. Can we do it on
what would you like? What would you like your official play to be, Andrew?
We'll go Vanderbilt money line +205. Is that the best number that's out that you can see right now? I saw 205 at Bet365. I see
at BetMGM.
A 200 at BetMGM.
Yes.
Let's go that. Fine. You know what else? Diego Pavia beat Auburn, if people forget, last year at New Mexico State, with the same offensive coordinator who is now with him at Vanderbilt. It's not like they don't know how to go into Auburn and win this football game. They know exactly what they need to do. Vanderbilt looks like the better team to me at this point. So yeah, let's go. 2-1, +200. Vanderbilt, this is us going on the fly here. Vanderbilt money line now. I just made a switch there. +200. At Auburn.
And not only did he beat them last year, what did he do the year before that? He beat Hugh Freeze at Liberty with New Mexico State. Diego Pavia, yes. 2-0 against Hugh Freeze. Now we're looking for 3-0. I'm going to keep us moving with another. I'm not playing the money line, but I have some thoughts about it. I really believe Duke +21 at Miami is a foolish number. I'm getting a full 3 touchdowns. Look, yeah, Duke lost to SMU. It was a problem. Duke was +6 in turnover margin and still lost. You know what that says to me? Duke played badly. You know what that says to me? Duke looked past SMU getting ready for Miami because Manny Diaz has a personal score to settle with his former employer the way they did him dirty in hiring our least favorite coach, Mario Cristobal. I genuinely believe Duke was looking ahead to this game. Furthermore, the best way for Duke to stay in this game is to rely on its pretty darn good defense. They're going to shorten up this game, try to muck it up a bit. I think 21 is just too big of a number in a game where I'm going to bet the underdog's defense tightens it up. Last point here as I try to move us along. Duke has forced 10 turnovers in the last 2 weeks. You and I have repeatedly pointed out that Cam Ward is quietly a turnover problem. This may be the week the world remembers.
Yeah, I think that the turnovers won't cost them the game, but it could definitely cost them the cover. So I agree with that.
Right. I'm not bold enough to go for a 3-touchdown underdog on the show. I'm not going to be that foolish, but I could understand it. And yeah, it's 9-1. Anyway, what do you got next? Oh, I know what you got next. Tried and true.
You know what week it is. It's Service Academy week. It feels weird talking about it this year. So for those of you who have not been paying attention, 44 now, 10-1. The under is in the last 55 meetings between Service Academies. That's over an 80% cash rate over that span. The last four seasons is when we've seen the biggest shift in these totals. We used to see these totals in the high 40s, low 50s, and now the average total of the last four seasons was 36.5. Now, what has made this season very unique is the way that Army and Navy are playing. We are looking at a potential back-to-back matchup for Army and Navy, maybe in the AAC championship, and then the rematch in the Army-Navy game. Both are undefeated. Oh, no, sorry, not undefeated anymore. Both are undefeated in conference play. And they have explosive offenses now where they are pushing the ball down the field through the air. Obviously not at a very high rate, but when they are passing the ball, they're passing the ball down the field and they're doing it effectively. And so we saw what happened in that last matchup between Navy and Air Force. It did go over. I'm like, I forget what the closing total was. What number we got. I think we bet it at 37.
36-37. Somewhere
36-37. So we're getting a 5-point adjustment in this matchup between Air Force and Army here. And we'll just go under once again. We're not going to buck the trend just yet. Under 42, which I'm seeing -110, over at bet 365. Now I can see the game going over if if Army wins 45-0. That's very much on the table, but I'm gonna stick to my guns here and say that despite the fact that Air Force has not been good this season, that's the other big change. Army and Navy are clearly much better than Air Force is this year. Air Force is bad. They can be our they bad team of the week. That said, they still know how to defend the triple option. That game did go over against Navy, but in that game, there was also a touchdown set up on this incredible catch on the sidelines that was about a 30-yard reception where the guy made just this incredible toe touch going out of bounds. Another one was on a reverse fourth down, where if the guy had just done his job, the guy on the outside did not hold contain, he makes that. That's a loss and a turnover, and instead, the game goes over. So all the principles are still there. I'm going under here. The number, we're getting a few more points, so under 42 in our Service Academy matchup now.
Look, you pretty much just did my handicap for me. I'm not telling you on that. I am taking Army, -22.5 against Air Force. You pretty much said it all for me. Air Force, they bad. Army, explosive offense. And as I've said before, I said it before Navy, Air Force, Army and Navy despise Air Force. They feel Air Force brags a bit about its easier admissions and uses that against Army and Navy in recruiting. These football programs have some genuine animosity toward Air Force. They will not shy away from running it up. And lastly, Army knows what's at stake. Shoot, this week we have a vice presidential nominee asking the world, unprompted in an interview, what are you going to do with an undefeated Army? Army knows what's going on, and I think Army's going to start taking care of teams to that tune. Army -22.5 is a quick and easy handicap for me. Explosive offense, motivated against a disastrous Air Force.
Back to me, eh? Okay, here we go. My last one for the week. We're going Illinois plus +3. I just like getting these hosting Minnesota. I really like getting these 3 points at home. Minnesota has obviously won 3 games in a row against competition that I don't really believe in. Maryland, UCLA. They beat USC as well. Illinois, meanwhile, really impressed with how the way Altmaier is playing. The defense, they have some ugly numbers when it comes to success rate, but I find that they're still a good tackling team. They just sometimes they'll miss those tackles and they go up for big plays. But I generally like the way they're playing on defense. We've seen them play in tough games before. I think the line's just a little funky for me. Getting 3 points at home, just something's a little off. I don't think that Minnesota is the type of offense that can create those explosive plays that really have hurt Illinois. And I think they're just going to put that matchup against Oregon. Just they're going to throw that away. They got outclassed by a much better team. And I think they're just going to refocus here and take care of business at home.
I hope you're right for the sake of the podcast. I also don't have faith in Illinois. This is a stay away game for me. You clearly studied it more than I have. I will defer to you, but the mid-tier of the Big Ten is starting to bother me as a handicapper. I'm not understanding it well enough. What I am understanding well enough, I'm going to go with a theme this week. I'm taking the good triple option offenses. Navy by 11 against Rice. I do not understand this line. It opened at 13. I got it at 13 Sunday. It fell to 12. I went back. It's now down to 11. Rice just fired head coach Mike Bloomgren. Are we saying firing him and having an interim head coach this week is a 2-point improvement? Of all weeks, I think that's a problem. You have to understand the triple option. You have to coach players up on that. That is a time-consuming and dedicated process. Meanwhile, this week, let's see here, you're reorganizing coaching staff responsibilities. You're reassuring players of the season's direction. You have coaches pondering what are they going to do in 4 weeks because they just lost their job. I do not think this was the week to fire your head coach. I think the midshipmen are going to run it up. Yeah, they got blown out by Notre Dame. It was because of turnovers. Rice doesn't have Notre Dame's defense. Rice is not going to cause the same triple option problems that Notre Dame did. Navy is as good as we have always thought Navy was. I do not understand why this line is falling. I'm not going to flinch. I'm going to keep betting Navy.
I'm not joining you on it, but I get it. I get it 100%. I feel a little burned last week after my James Madison fade their head coach fired spot. And James Madison just did not do what they needed to do in that matchup. So
now in that moment, I'm always willing to hear, I think it's called dead cat bounce. Like, yeah, you fire your head coach. There's some new juice in the building, but when you have to study the triple option, I don't think that new juice actually matters.
And it's especially when that team running the triple option is bigger than you. And like credit to Navy, they've thrown the new wrinkles in this year too, which has made the offense more effective. But man, that when you just start wearing on a smaller team, when they just keep pounding and pounding, like you don't want to play. Like those are the games where you end up quitting at the end.
Now let's get off our Service Academy praises and instead bring in our good friend Parker Fleming for a few minutes of our lovely chaos. Parker, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I hope that you guys see right here. I'm rocking some Covers merch.
That showed up on my
doorstep this week. So very grateful for that, and thought I'd join the team and wear it along. How are y'all?
Doing great.
Better now. That looks great on you, man. Blue is one of your many colors.
It is. It's absolutely. Yeah, I've got a couple of plays I'm pretty interested in here. I would love to drop them for you. I think I want to get this one out quick because it's about tonight. Am I crazy for liking? Am I crazy for liking Louisiana against Texas State here?
I have personally invested in the money line. Tell me why I'm right.
The defense is not amazing for Louisiana. I don't think I'm breaking any news by saying that. They're 91st at EPA per play. But, man, this Texas State run game has been really, really poor. 89th overall. Their passing game has not really had the ceiling that you wanted to see out of them all season. Only 31st in the nation. Louisiana has a huge advantage in starting field position allowed. They're not letting opponents get short drives. They're going to make things very hard on Texas State. I think Louisiana has some juice here. They're a very interesting team. Just because I think their offense is pretty consistent. They're 18th in EPA per dropback. So on the off chance, Texas State does get that explosive play, kind of starts out ahead of the curve, I think you're looking at a Louisiana offense that's potentially poised to be able to come from behind and in a negative game state. So that long leash does a lot there that makes me really, really excited. The only thing that makes me a little nervous is Louisiana hasn't been amazing on third and fourth downs. They're 49.5%. That's 129th in the nation on third and fourth down success rate. But Texas State's only 34th against a pretty weak schedule. So I think there's some opportunities there for kind of weakness on weakness to match up with each other. So I like Louisiana here.
Yeah, I'm kind of out on Texas State as well. They haven't lived up. They have not been what I thought they were going to be at this point.
Yeah, for all of McLeod's vibes, it's just like an amazing aesthetic quarterback. It's been a little bit disappointing, and it's rough. Like, they're growing and building and everything. But yeah, it's a little bit one that I didn't love. This next one feels a little bit like I'm taking my childhood dog to the vet to put him down. But
Oh no!
I want to try to guess where you're going to go with this. Florida State?
No. That Florida State has fallen in the tier of college football. I just don't care to invest in anymore. Florida State, Missouri. I'm not watching it anymore. I don't care.
Who are you putting down right now?
I'm going against UTSA. It just feels so sad that they've fallen to where they are this season. The offensive line's in such a bad situation. None of their defensive transfers really worked out like they thought. They're 115th in EPA per play on offense, 100th in EPA per play on defense. It is just very rough. And hopefully this is, you know, a rebuilding year, and next year with Coach Traylor, they'll be better. But man, they've been really, really off. On the other side of things, Memphis hasn't been amazing, but they have one of the most experienced quarterbacks in FBS with Seth Hennigan. And they had the come to Jesus moment of all come to Jesus moments last week in a very, very losable game against Charlotte. I do think that Memphis this week should be poised to come out on top. So that's one that I like a lot too here, is just, again, fading UTSA as we get down the stretch. The schedule gets hard. The grind kind of sets in. And Memphis maybe with a, hey, do you actually want your season to go like this moment last week that kind of gets the juices flowing for them.
Yeah.
Parker, I will tell you that I've never done this before. I just bet that while you were talking about it, I went in and I invested in there right there. I got Memphis by the even 7, which is why I wanted to act so quickly, because that's moving to 7 in the hook.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, the hook, depending on where you're shopping. Yeah, the hook is out there. The other one, I think I heard as I came in, you guys talked about this a little bit, but I can recycle it. I don't care. I have Illinois favored straight up. I understand the narrative of the body blow theory. And I understand, like, hey, Darius Taylor is not a guy to pick yourself up off the mat against. And this is going to be a very physical game. But I just don't love trusting Minnesota here. I mean, I think if we get in a defensive struggle, that Illinois is more poised to come out on top there. I just am not sure that I can trust Minnesota here. So I like Illinois, just kind of trusting the number there. I don't think you need to play them as a money line, because that requires far too much faith in Luke Altmaier. But generally, I think you can look at them and say, okay, this is overreacting to a performance. They should be favored here. So I'll go with them as the underdog as well.
That's what it just stood out when I saw that. I just felt like the number was wrong.
I actually inserted my foot firmly in my mouth earlier today talking on my show, hashtag like and subscribe, but because I thought Illinois was favored. I legitimately saw this line and just thought, there's no way that this is the way that it is. So when you feel that way about a game and you look at the numbers and you believe that, you have to, you know, you have to go ahead and agree with it. So those are my three there. I like Louisiana as a dog, Memphis as a favorite, and Illinois as a surprising dog.
I will do us all the favor of flipping that Louisiana video and getting it onto Twitter yet this afternoon, so it is on public record before that kicks off this evening. I will do that for you.
It's kind of like lettuce. I said this on Friday night. I did a little thing and I was talking about Boise State UNLV, and I was like, damn, I put this out Friday, like 45 minutes before the game, man. Like, this is going nowhere. There's no, you either see this right now or it's never happening again.
What was your pick on that game?
I took Boise, and I'm not right about, you know, every college football game or even most college football games, but in kind of the exact same game state that I thought UNLV was going to be able to limit the explosives. They're trying to, they're going to go pound for pound, but that Boise was just going to have the talent advantage to be able to extend that offense past where they could kind of come back. And I mean, what a meaty drive there. It was like 8 minutes at the end of the game or something. I mean, Boise just talk about death by 1,000 cuts. For all of your offenses that talk about death by 1,000 cuts and do a bunch of screen passes, I'm like, no, that was death by 1,000 cuts right there. That was death by 1,000 hammer punches to the throat just to run the season or run the game out. But
All I know is I want them to play again, so I am team Colorado State must lose.
Okay, especially because either one of them is going to be favored by a touchdown over Colorado State, right? Like, Colorado State is yes. not a great football team, and the schedule asymmetry is really – that's my big boomer take here, and I don't need to get on here like, you know, Mickey Rooney and
yes,
start asking – did I say Mickey or Andy Rooney?
Rooney? Who was it Mickey Rooney?
Who's Mickey Rooney? Golly, I either need more or less caffeine than the current state that I'm in, but – the schedule asymmetry is exhausting. The fact that the majority, like the Big 12 this year, it really just comes down to the fact of like who's playing who and who's not playing who. And that's what's going to end up determining who plays for the championship. It seems so fraudulent. Like if we're going to do this round table, you're kind of playing everyone, just then call the leader at the top of the table the champion and don't play the championship game because yeah. there's no like feeder filter mechanism. It's just a weird random game again. Bring back divisions. This is nonsense. We got to fix this.
Yes.
On that note, I did go through tiebreakers today. BYU has a pretty clear path to the Big 12 title game. Big 12 tiebreakers will not matter unless BYU loses. In the ACC, if everybody wins out, tough break, SMU. You played too easy of a schedule. The Big 10, Oregon, Penn State, and Indiana all went out. Tough break, Indiana. You played too easy of a schedule. You're out. That's going to be so frustrating. These fun stories are the ones that are getting knocked out of the playoff of the conference championship games.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what's unfortunate about it. There are some fun ones like Arizona State does play Kansas State and BYU down the stretch and could potentially be extremely consequential. I think Cincinnati as well is playing Iowa State. And are they playing Kansas State too? I'm trying to pull that up to make sure I have that correct. But I think Arizona State and Cincinnati stood out to me. Yeah, they have Iowa State and Kansas State as like the Big 12 champion is basically going to come down to the fact that like BYU's or Arizona State and Cincinnati both have consequential games against BYU, Iowa State, and Kansas State left.
You're overlooking one. You of all people, I know you got to get running here in a minute, but you were at Rice-Eccles a couple of weeks ago. In 2 weeks, we have BYU at Utah. The scale of wouldn't it be funny, Utah in the season that it has lost, ruining BYU's dreams would be funny.
That's the stuff dreams are made of in college football. Shout out to Rice-Eccles Stadium. Those fans, I think this is a compliment. It's going to sound not like it, but those fans are extremely responsive to the product on the field. When it was like competitive and they were doing great, they were absolutely into it. And as soon as things turned south, those fans immediately shut up. And then there was a little bit of a period where it looked like they were going to come back and they all bought in. And as soon as Utah didn't score in that last possession, they're like, all right, see you guys later. This is a good game. But they were in it until that very last minute. It was very, very funny. Love that stadium.
We will get more of your thoughts on that game in a week, hopefully. For now, I know you've got to run. You're a busy individual. Reminder, folks, Parker's on the record of Louisiana tonight. He's on the record before that game kicks off. Parker, always grateful for you jumping in with us.
Thanks, appreciate it, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Parker Fleming, available on Twitter at StatsOWAR. Andrew, you want to recap our bets now that you feel even more confident in that Illinois +3 because Parker did you the service of joining you. He thinks Illinois is a favorite.
He has them favored. I love it. So for me, I'm taking Penn State +3.5 at home. Drew Aller's going to play. We're also going Vandy, not +6.5. We're going Vandy money line +200. Air Force Army under 42. Service Academy unders ride once again. And Illinois +3.
I have also populated the board. We have put a lot of plays on the board this Tuesday. We're usually more voluminous on Saturdays. My Tuesday card, Texas A&M at South Carolina, first half under 22.5, the SEC first half under of the week, taking that out of your hands. Boise State, -23 against San Diego State. I'm a little surprised I had to talk you into that Vanderbilt money line. If that cashes, I'm going to do a little bit of a pat on the back. Duke, +21 at Miami, the Manny Diaz revenge game. Army by 22.5 against despised Air Force. And Navy by 11 against coachless Rice. I do not understand why that spread has been falling. That's it for us, Andrew. We should remind the world again. We will be live 9 a.m. Eastern on Saturday on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. Like and subscribe to College Football 134 to show us you're getting the Tuesday value long before that Saturday show. That is Andrew Cayley. At Covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer at D_Farmer. Andrew, I'll see you Saturday morning.
Can't wait, bud.